John Hanson here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. A very happy, sunny Saturday afternoon, everyone. 1:36 here on WGN. I'm so excited to bring in Audrey Anderson, leading criminal defense attorney for Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. And also, Audrey, I just love your perspective because, and I know we've talked about this, but just in case someone has never heard you here on this show before, you spent time in the DuPage County's state's attorney's office too, right?
Right. So I started my career as a prosecutor. Then after about 20 years, switch sides, and now I do the opposite defense work.
Do people say that, like, we've switched sides? Are there jokes in the lawyer community of going from prosecution to defense or the other way around?
Right, definitely going from the white hat to the black hat, or reverse, I guess, depending on your perspective.
Wait, they have different hats they call them, they refer to them as?
Yes, depending on your perspective, right. Yeah, if a prosecutor looks at defense as wearing black hats, or defense attorneys look at ourselves as wearing white hats.
Okay, that's interesting. You're peeling back the layers of law that I have no idea what happens beyond. But today we're going to talk a little bit about DCFS, the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, and people that you represent and why it's important to have a strong defense attorney if something's going on, but also a little bit about the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. And I was hoping we could start there, just for people that maybe have assumptions or don't quite know exactly who does what. What is DCFS? What do they do, and what are they in charge of?
Right, so DCFS is an administrative agency through the government, and they investigate allegations of child abuse, but they are not a criminal agency, so you cannot be charged with a crime by DCFS.
They can't arrest you, like they don't have the authority to bring you on in.
Correct, and all they can do is indicate you, saying that there is evidence that you abused and or neglected a child, or unfound the allegation that you did not abuse and or neglect a child, and then just place you on a state central registry that just says that you are have been indicated as a child abuser.
And then do they just pass it along to the authorities, and then they take the actual actions of taking the child away from you or see more serious crimes or offenses after that?
Right. So DCFS, if it is serious enough, they can take and remove a child from you and bring you into court. And so then it becomes more of a criminal matter. So you have two parallel investigations that could happen. The criminal investigation through a children's advocacy center or a police department, and then an administrative through DCFS.
Okay. But like, let's say so a child was removed from your home, you would get a day in court is what you're saying.
Correct. Right. And so DCFS can remove a child from your home, and then you would have a day in court to go in front of the judge to argue about whether or not the child should have been removed. And then if the judge finds, yes, the child should have been removed, what steps or goals the parent or guardian needs to accomplish to have the child eventually returned back to you, or eventually, perhaps if you don't accomplish those goals, to have your parental rights terminated.
Is it pretty serious what would have to have happened for a child to be removed? Would it have to be repeated minimal offenses, minor offenses that just aggregate over time, or one serious thing, or I imagine it runs the gamut?
Right. It unfortunately runs the gamut. So it could just be a series of domestic violence where the children are present, or if a child is injured and there's no explanations for a specific, like, spiral fracture of a bone that can't be explained away by just falling off a bike, mm-hmm. then the child could be removed from the parent or that home and then brought to court.
Okay. And is it under the discretion? Is there like a panel of DCFS folks that look at each case and decide, or is it up to sometimes an individual caseworker?
Right. Unfortunately, it's up to the individual caseworker. So it can be somewhat subjective for that caseworker and that caseworker supervisor. So what may occur at an office at the Glen Ellyn office could be completely different than an office in Aurora or a different office in DCFS.
Interesting. So who are the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center? This is an entire different organization, right?
Correct. So there's numerous children's advocacy centers, and each county has their own. So Cook County, okay. DuPage County, a lot of the other counties have their own. And those are part of the state attorney's offices, so criminal investigative arms of the prosecutor's office that investigates the crimes and charges the parents or guardians or an adult caretaker with a criminal charge, such as aggravated battery or domestic battery.
So it's a county-level organization set up by the county, by a prosecutor's wing. I don't want to say to go after, but that's what it feels like, that they are actually more active in and have the ability to arrest you and pull you in?
Correct. So that's just the part, the arm that arrests you and charges you. So that's more punitive.
Okay.
So it's completely, so you would be a convicted offender, convicted felon, or convicted of a misdemeanor.
Do they investigate claims? Like, how does that work? Do they take tips from people in the community, neighbors? How does that work?
Right. So it's the same. So you can get a random call from a neighbor, a 911 call, or some employees are mandated reporters, such as coaches, teachers, nurses, doctors. They are required to contact police if they think a crime has occurred, or even therapists. I've had therapists call in because they thought that their child patient was abused or hit by a parent or guardian, and then the therapist calls the police and DCFS. So DCFS comes in to investigate whether they should remove the child, and then the police, the Children's Advocacy Center, could come in to see whether or not that parent or guardian should be charged with a crime, like a sex offense or just battery.
Interesting. So do the two work together in tandem to address certain cases, or are they completely separate agencies that operate on their own accord?
They're completely separate agencies.
Okay.
But a lot of times the DCFS caseworker won't interview a child if it's a sexual allegation, but rather will rely on the law enforcement, the Children's Advocacy Center, to do that, as they have more experience and training with regards to how to talk to a minor who's been sexually abused.
Okay. So my curiosity is that with having DCFS in place, and maybe I'm wrong here, I imagine that was set up first. Like, we've had DCFS for a long time. Did these advocacy centers come along because counties felt like maybe DCFS couldn't act fast enough, they didn't have the resources to do it full enough, or was it for completely different reasons and they're just trying to fill different holes and operate in a different way?
Right. The Children's Advocacy Centers, or CRCs, were created to fill a different hole for the criminal investigation. These are special detectives, investigators that are dealt and trained in speaking with children about sexual abuse. So kids who have been sexually abused by an adult, or sometimes even another minor themselves. So it's something that can come in and fill in the gaps.
Okay. Now, I want to make clear that even you are a defense attorney and you defend parents, but we all recognize the need for organizations like this. Because I could just picture someone listening and saying, well, are they trying to rally against DCFS or the Children's Advocacy Center? No. These organizations, through a lot of peril, do a lot of great work, right?
Right. Because a lot of children just don't have a voice. They're too little, or they're too afraid by people that have abused them. So these agencies are excellent agencies that really can step in and protect children.
Right. And they do a great job at it. And a lot of them are, I mean, especially, I don't know about Children's Advocacy Centers, but I definitely know DCFS overworked, underpaid, and tons of caseloads that they have to deal with.
Oh, very true. And it's very hazardous for them. I mean, I think in January, a DCFS caseworker was killed when that caseworker was responding to a call, because they're required to go to a home within 24 hours of the allegation. So they go into these domestic situations, not ever meeting these families, and they're by themselves a lot of the time. So they put themselves in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. So who do you represent? You often represent parents whose children have been taken away in situations that on the outside looking in might seem like a no-brainer, but on the inside looking out might be a lot more complicated than that.
Right. Yes. So we represent parents or guardians who have had their children taken away, or who DCFS has received an allegation of abuse, and so they're conducting their investigations, which are supposed to take 60 days. So we represent parents. And then we also represent parents as they have the concurrent investigation, usually from law enforcement.
So forgive a blunt question, but why if someone might say, oh my gosh, this person's been accused of egregious things, why would you take a case on like that? Why is that important to you?
Just because parents sometimes have no idea what's going on, and it's just an accident that a child's been injured.
Right.
They've fallen off a bike, or it's an accident between two children, and parents get the blame because some child is seriously injured for a complete accident. Or it could be an unusual medical condition that a baby has, a newborn may have, a vitamin deficiency that creates brittle bones. And so then this poor baby looks like they've been abused by these parents, but that's not the case at all. So these parents need a voice. The legal system, DCFS system, is very confusing, and it gets so emotional for them because it's their child that people are trying to take away or say bad things that they've done to these children.
I think we've all seen like Law and Order shows and other shows where people report there's a broken bone, and of course the show depicts actual violence happening within a home. I think we're all conditioned to think, oh my gosh, a child has an injury. That's got to be abuse. Whereas parents, I mean, every parent listening here probably knows things happen, right? And it almost feels weird to talk about this, but yes, My brother fell off his bike, shattered his elbow plate. It was dangerous. A neighbor who is maybe well-meaning, but thinking, you know, oh my gosh, I really need to be aware. We're hyper-aware right now, and we should be about children dealing with, especially in sexual situations. We're very aware of trying to help out and report these things. Are we a little too, I don't want to say too aware, but we're resulting to things too quick. We jump the gun too quickly.
That's very true, that a lot of people are so concerned that they can call in. And you can call in and make these allegations and these hotline calls and be completely anonymous. Mm-hmm. So it's so easy for people to report a neighbor or something that they feel is suspicious, but it's really not. It's a parent who's perhaps homeschooling a child because of COVID, or homeschooling or a child is home for an extended period of time because of mono or some other medical illness such as cancer or some other issue that they have. So because of the times they can't go to school. But a neighbor takes that out of the specific situation and doesn't realize all the specifics.
When it gets to a court of law in these situations, you know, we're taught you're innocent until you're proven guilty. The burden is on the state to prove that you did X, Y, or Z. That's what, you know, we hear about all sorts of cases. Is it a similar situation in family courts or in those situations that, look, DCFS or the case agent or the folks from the Children Advocacy Center, do they have to prove beyond reasonable doubt that you harmed your child, or does a judge have a little bit more leeway to say, well, the preponderance of evidence shows this? What's the standards in a court like that?
Right. For DCFS or juvenile abuse and neglect cases that are brought into court, it's not beyond a reasonable doubt.
Okay.
The burden is much, much, much lower depending on where you are in the juvenile abuse and neglect criminal process. So that's the difficulty. And the judges, of course, they want to err on the side of caution.
Right.
They don't want to send a child back home to be abused or end up killed, unfortunately.
Of course, of course.
Right. So, unfortunately, the burden is so much lower for a juvenile court.
And, of course, like a lot of us people are probably nodding along, being like, yeah, it should be. But, of course, there's so many circumstances where that could really lead to a parent losing their child for something that was completely innocuous.
Right. And so sometimes you have newborns that are taken away, and by the time the child returns back to the parents, that child is a toddler, 2-3 years old. Well, unfortunately, that child had 1 hour a week visits or occasional, eventually it turns to overnights, but then they go back to what to that child is a stranger, but is their biological parents who may not have done anything wrong. And so they're so attached to their foster family that it makes it just very heartbreaking for the children and the foster parents and the parents and everybody that's involved.
Do you find it's delicate for you, too? Because, I mean, we want, like, especially with all these high-profile cases that we've had about child abusers getting away with it for so many years. And I'm so glad we're more vigilant about that stuff when we're open to talk about it. But there are negative consequences sometimes of that. That's a fine line to ride, right?
It really is a fine line. And then with social media and everyone can post things and text one another, you can't get rid of that stuff. So if someone sees DCFS and your child being hauled off, they don't know the circumstances beyond
true.
That or behind or why that even happened.
Reputation's damaged forever for something that you might be completely innocent of.
Right. And it goes on and on for the kids when they're at school and other social things, if they have sports or other extracurriculars that their parents can't go to. And there's always the underground grapevine.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. All right. I'm really late for a break. We're going to take that. If you have any questions, 312-981-7200, get them in right now. We're going to look at them during the commercial break, see which ones we might be able to answer. And we'll have more with Audrey Anderson. Where can people go for more information about all that you do?
So they can look at our website, www.andersonaa.com, mm-hmm. or feel free to give us a call.
All right. We'll have more with Audrey Anderson after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, continuing our conversation with Audrey Anderson, a leading criminal defense attorney. Audrey, we've been talking about DCFS and situations in which people are reporting, and perhaps erroneously, and we had a text come in that they say, people weaponize the anonymous reporting system to take out grievances with neighbors over fences, patios, other things. Seen it happen more than once. Have you?
Yes, unfortunately, that's very true. The DCFS hotline, you don't have to leave your name. You can be completely what DCFS refers to as anonymous. So even DCFS doesn't know your name. Because when DCFS does an investigation of a parent, DCFS is not permitted to tell the parent who made the allegation. So parents never know, or guardian never knows, who made this hotline call to investigate them. They just kind of guess. But it can be completely anonymous, where even the caseworker, the hotline caller, doesn't say their name. And still, DCFS investigates, regardless of how ridiculous the allegation could be.
Ex-spouses?
Oh, definitely. Ex-spouses, ex-partners, those that have grievances. Or, you know, you separated, but then it's the new boyfriend, girlfriend that's being vindictive. Definitely when there's custody issues.
You know what's ridiculous about it is there are probably, you know, serious allegations that called in, things that need to be, you know, investigated. You're wasting the resources of people when you put a fake one in, and you're decrediting the legitimate ones that come in when you make fake ones. We had a caller wanted to know, they didn't want to come on air, but they wanted to ask, so what is your advice? Are there set standards, or what should you call in? How should you do it? What should we be reporting?
You definitely, if you do feel that there's an issue, that you see abuse or neglect for a child, absolutely call it in.
Yeah.
DCFS can screen it out. I mean, that's what they're there for. So if they realize that it's something that really would not take much effort or time, they will still put in the effort and time to see whether or not it's validated or supported for the allegation. So if you do have a concern for a child, you really do need to call and be that child's voice, because there may not be someone else there for that child to talk on their behalf.
Yeah. They would need someone like you, because obviously, you know, they could have a public defender if it goes to trial or something, or they have to go to court, but there's an investigatory stage, and that's where you guys and what you do at Anderson Attorneys and Advisors, that's what you guys do and help out with too, right?
Right. So we help out with the investigations as well. And you're right. At that point, when it's just investigations and it's not at court, you don't get a public defender. You have to do this all on your own. So DCFS shows up at your home, sometimes with law enforcement if they've never been there before, and they demand, regardless of time of night, to go into your house, search your house, talk to your kids. So parents need to know their rights, that there could be an attorney there to tell you what questions they're going to be asking you. They're not only going to be asking you about the allegation, but everything about you, and go through all your cabinets to see if you have food and how you live. So yeah. It's very invasive.
We had a question come in. I will ask it because we talked about it last time. What age can a child be left to babysit younger siblings? It's nebulous, right? We talked about this before.
Right. Unfortunately, it is nebulous. So that's what the difficulty. When we were kids, you could probably be 11 or 10 and be left with your siblings while your parent ran to the store or ran to the train station to pick up the other parent.
Uh-huh.
But now it seems like you have to be 7th, 8th grade. There's really nothing written in stone about that.
Right. Okay. And it obviously depends on the kids as well, and who you have, and on how long you're going for. Right. Like, that's a lot of different variables. So unfortunately, 815, we don't have an answer for you. Gwen is on the line. Unfortunately, we're not going to have time to get to Gwen, but she was talking about injuries in sports. They happen all the time too. And I wanted to really, just really quickly before we go, the brittle bone thing again, because you said you've seen that. What again? This is with infants, and someone thinks that they're being abused because they're seeing what?
Right, because they're seeing a lot of bone fractures in infants, whereas obviously infants aren't really moving around, and they shouldn't have fractures in their bones, in their legs or their arms and things like that. So if they're going for a follow-up appointment and it's swollen or bruised, that leads a doctor to think that there's some sort of physical abuse going on. But it could be a hereditary issue or a brittle bone, such as they have a vitamin deficiency.
Right. We had a texter calling in about DCFS investigators. They're not stupid, and you're absolutely right. These caseworkers are not. They screen through a lot of these things, and they can a lot of times spot these false claims pretty fast, not every single time. And the texter mentioned that they do get a public defender as well. But, of course, having an attorney, if you've lost your child and you are innocent of anything, they need a voice, and they need someone like you to defend them. I mean, this is a serious emotional situation.
Definitely. That's very true. And there are so many experienced DCFS caseworkers. I don't think I've ever come across one that isn't passionate about what they do.
100%.
So they can't see if it's just a baloney call.
But still.
Right. But yeah. They still take it very seriously.
As they should. It's a difficult conversation. It's such an important one, though. We're talking about children and their parents. And ultimately, at the end of the day, we want a good parent with their kid to raise them. Parents can change. There can be, you know, there's a lot of factors at play. So if anyone's listening to this right now, they want to reach out to you, what's the best way to do it?
They can contact us through our website,
www.AndersonAA. I have it in front of me.
Right.
I love putting you on the spot for it. I'm like, I've got the note right in front of me. AndersonAA.com. Audrey, as always, it's great to chat with you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you again.
Yeah. News next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.